Sure that we're monitoring the coming across, all right. Looks like we're okay. This is Jim Boning of the Center for History of Chemistry speaking with Dr. Robert T. Armstrong in his home at Highland Beach, Florida on May 1st, 1986. Dr. Armstrong, you were born on December 27th, 1909 in Chadron, Nebraska. Can you tell me something about your father and mother, names, occupations?
Yes. My father was William Dawson Armstrong, who was born in Iowa, I believe. My mother, Alice Winifred Cole, who came to Nebraska as a child and survived the Sioux Wars, hidden in a cistern through many of them. I personally do not remember Nebraska during those years, in as much as my family moved to Arizona in 1912, the year the state was admitted to the Union. And there my earliest memories.
Did you have any brothers and sisters?
I had one brother, 3 years older than I, who was an MIT graduate in electrical engineering, and I believe ended his career with AT&T as chief engineer, I believe, and then went to government security group in Washington for his last few years, and then died about 10-12 years ago.
What did your father do?
My father was, at the time in Nebraska, my father was county treasurer, but he was a sort of ne'er-do-well character, always hunting the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, so that grew up on a farm, then with many brothers and sisters older who got the farm, he headed west and was a cowpuncher, bringing cattle up from Mexico to the end of the railroad line at Omaha, then to the Klondike and the Gold Rush, and in keeping with that, naturally, when he was hunting new goals and the new state coming into the Union, well, let's go to Arizona. There he started a bank. After all, in pretty thin population, I believe at that time the population of Arizona was one person per square mile. And the bank foundered, and so we homesteaded. Then...
Where in Arizona?
This is down the southeast corner, originally at Bowie, Arizona. Then homesteaded out, 8 miles east of Bowie, at Olga on the Southern Pacific Rail Line. And my mother taught school, small schoolroom, 4 mile walk each way, taught all classes from first grade through high school in a small one. And since I couldn't be left at home alone, I had to enter the first grade when I was 4 years old.
Yeah. And how long were you in? Did you have your mother as a teacher, I guess?
Well, I had no other teacher until we went back to Nebraska about 1918, so that I would have been sixth or seventh grade, I guess. My mother's mother, my grandmother, was getting old and wanted her back there. And so I then went to a public school in Cody, Nebraska.
And did you then Where did you go to high school?
I can answer high school is I really didn't.
Okay.
I went briefly a month or two in Loveland after my mother died, and when I was 12, I went to a few months in Loveland, Colorado, then 2 years at a unique school. Is a prep school associated with what was then the Colorado School of Colorado Agricultural College at Fort Collins.
Oh, yeah.
Now I think Colorado State College. They had a prep school there called, it was called the Shorthorns, designed for the children of farmers in the around the state. With a six-month term so they could work in the fields in the fall and the spring, and with practical courses like forge, foundry, machine shop, pattern making, mechanical drawing, and things like that, which I had 2 years of that. Then my brother, who was going to the college there, decided, and how he managed, I don't know, but he wanted to go to MIT, and so he headed east. My father and I followed, and I went to work in Boston. Worked as a stockroom boy, U.S. Rubber, and for several months, I guess, the better part of a year.
That would have been 1925,
when I got the idea that I'd like to go back to school. So I went up to the State House and asked where I could go to school in Boston. And they were aghast and said, "Why aren't you in school?" So they suggested I go to Boston English High, and that was in February. It would have been February 26th. And I took a round, heavy load of courses for the second term. And when they, in the end of the school year, and they wanted a conference about my course is scheduled for the following year, I remember replying, "Oh, I won't be here. I'm going to MIT." And so I took entrance exams and college boards and went to summer school. And lo and behold, I was interviewed and I got into MIT, with the most serious problem being the square on the registration form when it said age, with a note saying no one admitted under the age of 17. And I was only 16. So I wrote down 17, and then my conscience got the best of me, and I wrote a 6 over it. It ended up a black blob. But they let me in anyway.
Let me ask this first. Were there any teachers, other than your mother, who influence you in any fashion?
Not that I'm aware of in those years. I was not interested in school. The word was Robert could if he would only try. That was about it. I didn't have much interest. And to this day, I have no idea of what, of how it happened that I turned around and took an interest. Probably due to a chap who roomed with a classmate of my brother's, who roomed, stayed with us, Max Parshall, who ended up, I believe, as a professor of chemistry at Fort Collins. I think he's met his wife there. He retired many years ago. And I haven't been in touch with him for a good many years, but I think he encouraged me. I remember his bringing home little bottles of hydrochloric acid and so on, showing them to me. I kept them up on the roof of the building, I remember. Got interested, and I think that was the real stimulus.
When did you take any chemistry in high school? Or not, I shouldn't say high school, but did you have any chemistry experience prior to entering MIT?
No chemistry, no chemical course at all prior to entering MIT.
What about physics or math?
As you gather, I just didn't have high school. I entered the summer, you see, in Fort Collins, there were practical courses. And then only a few months at Boston English High, where I did register for and had, but it was quite hopeless. It was second term of French, and I did it really didn't take. Anyway, I recall taking French, German, solid geometry in the summer. MIT at that time gave summer courses for students who hoped to get admitted, and entering on conditions in French and I don't remember now, but two or three conditions which had to be cleared up our freshman year, but managed.
What was your brother studying? And
brother was then studying electrical engineering, and he graduated, I believe. He was in an industrial cooperation electrical communications course, so that he worked one term for AT&T and one term back at MIT during that period, and I think finished with perhaps a master's degree about 1929, I would say, 28 or 29.
When you entered MIT, what goal did you have in mind at that point? Did you select chemistry when you entered, or?
Yes. Oh, the classmate of my brother's was in chemistry, okay. And that's how I happened to. I registered in chemical engineering to start with. Then transferred to course 5 chemistry, I think at the end of the first term, perhaps.
Why the switch from chemical engineering to chemistry?
I would imagine chemical engineering was an effort to be slightly different than my roommate, you see.
Okay.
And a recognition when I got there that science was just a little kick above engineering after all. I think
What were your courses that first year then?
Well, chemistry, the most important, of course, inorganic chemistry, and had Beaker Joe Phelan, old Professor Phelan, who was, it's worth mentioning, is this Professor Phelan, who was a full professor, teaching simply inorganic, undergraduate inorganic chemistry, and H. Monmouth Smith, Professor H. Monmouth Smith, was also full professor teaching inorganic freshman chemistry. I was in Phelan's classes, yet it seems to me the crucial thing is that not so much that I remember, not so much what they taught me, but if you think today, realize today, here was a boy, no money at all, you see, hungry most of the time, and those two professors recognized it enough to dig in their own pocket and loan me money to get me through that freshman year where they felt responsible for me. When you think of the atmosphere today, compared to that. It's impressive. This is extremely important. Indeed, they carried me along for a good many years. When I graduated, finally, when I left with a PhD, I still owed those two great professors probably over $1,000 apiece, which in today's terms would be $10,000 apiece at least, you see. And they never split a word until I had paid them both back took me about 5 years after I finished, when the last payment, both of them wrote me such a nice note. And
that's amazing. I was going to ask you about your financial support and how you, and you just answered that question. Did you take some math courses and physics courses then?
Oh, yes. We had regular freshman physics, and indeed, we had a special course that was in 1926. It seemed it was an extra course, 8 o'clock in the morning in the big lecture hall on the newest theories of the atomic structure.
Yeah.
And it was quite advanced for the time. Yes, and physics, of course, calculus. I had to take such things as descriptive geometry, physical training, that was a killer, French, German. But the real pleasure then was in not the freshman year, it was the sophomore year. I was permitted to take what they called general studies at MIT then. These were 2-hour-a-week courses that you really didn't get credit for them except in sort of an offhand way, but they counted somehow. And I recall Professor Robinson in English literature and Professor Pearson in appreciation of art. These were really highlights there, that those early years. But the rest of it, as you well imagine, in those days at MIT was strictly digging in the trenches.
What about organic chemistry?
Organic chemistry undergraduate at MIT started as a junior. I think I should precede that by saying that as it will, as I think it's noted in that story I've given you there, that following my freshman year, and still in need, of course, of money to eat, I was lucky enough to, well, first, the first course, when I shifted to course 5, yes, that required a one summer session term of qualitative analysis. And that presented a major financial problem, but having taken that, the Professor Hamilton, who was then head of analytical chemistry at MIT, put me on as a laboratory assistant for the second term of qualitative analysis, so that I had a job. And I taught qualitative analysis in the lab then. By that time I had turned 17, and in those days a lab assistant was a member of the faculty. So I suspect that I was one of the youngest official faculty members MIT ever had, the age of 17.
I certainly think so.
Purely out of desperation to eat. But then, second term, second year was quantitative analysis in chemistry and physical chemistry, first year, then first course in physical chemistry, then organic chemistry the third year. And I remained as a lab assistant in analytical chemistry in summers, and then became a lab assistant in organic chemistry there after I'd had that course. So I was always on the faculty from 1927 on until 37.
Who was the who were the instructors in both physical and organic chemistry?
Miles Sherrill was Professor Sherrill, grand old man, was professor, taught physical chemistry and authored the then universally used book on physical chemistry, I think. Professor Mulliken, Sam Mulliken, was the head of undergraduate organic chemistry department. I think the other professors at the time, Professor Underwood, who wrote textbooks, had textbooks published at the time, Huntress and Ashdown were names at the time. I had more on Ashdown later. Professor Mulliken was the, after Beaker Joe Phelan, Professor Mulliken was the man I looked to mostly, and who was so very good to me. I worked for him nights doing various things, and I don't know, I think this you might be of some interest. And I suspect there aren't too many copies. I just happened to run across this. I put my, where I'd gotten in the book in 35, just 50 years ago. I was working for him, synthesizing some compounds and working out his qualitative. At the time, this was an extremely important field and method of analyzing organic compounds. After all, we didn't have mass specs and so on. I'll give that to you if you like, and put that in the...
Thank you very much. Are you sure?
No, yes. I've kept practically no papers, and so I've dug everything out. And, it's a good place for it to go.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Did you do any research as an undergraduate?
I think the most important research I did, and it has a bit of humor, was a long project for the Wrigley Chewing Gum Company. Through Professor Underwood, we were studying, seeking antioxidants for chewing gum. The chicle, and then chewing gum in those days, was all made out of gutta percha, and it came in balls full of worms and bugs and filthy stuff. And my job was to incorporate various compounds and put them in an air oven and to say for 80 degrees and test the brittleness every day and write up reports of, and we did. We found obviously amines that, aromatic amines that did it, and I wouldn't be surprised by what Wrigley Chewing Gum put those dreadful compounds in chewing gum in those days.
Probably so.
My undergraduate research, which you did at MIT, had an undergraduate thesis, had to do, I think it was a study of the, I saw it here someplace, a study of the isomerization of inorganic nitrites.
Who was that with?
Oh, boy, I wonder. I think it was probably Professor Shum, S-C-H-U-M-B, who was... memory fails me a bit there.
Now, at this time, the Depression came along, too. Did this have any effect when that occurred?
The Depression added problems to existing problems, is all you can say for myself. Having been hungry, I was just a little hungrier. I recall very well, of course, that the bank holiday But that didn't pose any problem for me, since I didn't have a bank account anyway. I think the toughest part of that was that, well, I should go back a little bit, because with all of the outside work, for a couple of years, I was the keeper of the telephone switchboard in the basement of a big doctor's office building in Boston, and where I had a bed. And I kept track of 20 physicians from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And studied in between, you see. So this got me. Finally, I think the spring of 30, I collapsed and put in the infirmary. So I didn't graduate with my class in 30, but I guess it was lucky, because I might have taken the only job that was offered to anyone in the class of chemistry class of 30. Standard Oil came in, I presume it was Standard New Jersey, at the time, I don't know, Standard New Jersey, came in and guaranteed a job as filling station attendant to any member of the class who wanted it. And not a single other job was available. Those were hard times. Now, they weren't much better the following year when I did get my bachelor's degree, but good old Professor Mulliken kept me on as a lab assistant, $1,200 a year, and that was more than, or at least as much as you could make any other way, and so I went on for the PhD. I think not out of intellectual capability, but out of economic advantage.
And your PhD work, actually you were there 4 years, is that correct? You got your degree in 35?
Yes, that's right.
And
that's right.
Your BS in 31.
That's right.
Were you really out, because of your health, were you really out of almost a year then?
I was out one spring and summer, but Andrew was back the following fall. I worked that summer for the Department of Agriculture out in Colorado, and measuring water flow in the rivers out there, and got my health back pretty well.
I see.
Yes, so I came back as going after a PhD, and nothing remarkable about that. I think, except the choice of research topic, which became interested. I really had leanings toward physical chemistry, probably because I wasn't all that good in math and wanted to be. But so I got interested in spectroscopy, and prepared and cyclopropane and worked assiduously to get it to high purity, then went after the Raman and infrared spectra. Raman had just
about,
within the last three or four years, previous 3 or 4 years, had made his discovery, you see, and so this was a nice, simple molecule to study, and the symmetry characteristics made it a rather elegant molecule for conformance to symmetry rules. And it was with Gilbert King, Dr. Gil King, who was then taking his PhD in physical chemistry, that I collaborated. We published together on this.